Hi there, listeners. Welcome to episode 111 of Never on the Back Foot podcast. Joining me on the podcast is Lalit Kalidas. Lalit is a reporter and sub-editor with Sportstar. He primarily writes about cricket and loves watching tennis. His other interests include playing cricket and relishing long drives, besides an affinity for photography. The Ranji Trophy 2022 has now entered the last four stages, with Bengal, Madhya Pradesh, Mumbai and Uttar Pradesh being the four teams to fight for a place in the final. India's premier domestic competition was held in two phases this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the IPL. The league stage was completed before the IPL got underway, while the quarters were scheduled from June 9th onwards. Bengal drew its match with Jharkhand in the first quarter-final and qualified based on first-inning score. Mumbai defeated Uttarakhand in the second quarter-final by a record margin of 725 runs to make it to the semi-finals. Uttar Pradesh beat Karnataka in the third quarter-final by 5 wickets, while Madhya Pradesh won the fourth quarter-final against Punjab by 10 wickets. Eight quarter-finalists put up a fighting display with both bat and ball in the last few days, and here we look at some major talking points from the four clashes. Hi, Lalit. Welcome to Never on the Back Foot podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Neha. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm good. It's been quite a week in Bangalore. So yeah, feeling great.
Right. And how is it, you know, watching the Ranji Trophy quarterfinals live and reporting it as well?
Well, I was covering the Punjab-Madhya Pradesh game at the Alur facility of the KSEA, which comprises three beautiful grounds. To sum up the experience, I'd seen this one comment from someone on Twitter saying that it must be feeling like being in a cricketing multiplex as a spectator or journalist. That's exactly how it felt out there, with three venues and a lot of promising young players on show. It was a great education on cricketing and journalistic terms for me.
Absolutely, you know, and your tweets were super insightful, and we will talk about the matches in detail now. So let's talk about the Mumbai-Uttarakhand match, right? So the domestic giants Mumbai were obviously on a roll against Uttarakhand. They clinched this thumping 725-run win, and batting first, they posted this mammoth 647 for 8, and we saw the debutant playing really well. Sarfaraz Khan also, like, you know, really supporting him well. So how good was that batting effort according to you?
This season has slightly been a sort of a comeback year for Mumbai in red ball cricket, hasn't it? There were no questions about who was entering the contest as the favourite, and Mumbai did exactly what it needed to do to qualify. That is to bat big first up and constrict the opposition. I think they carried it out pretty easily, with Sarfaraz replicating his stupendous form once again. Also, his shot making against the red ball is hitting new zones, and I think it's about time he gets the call up to the next level. And as for Suvedh Parkar, from the very little that I was able to see from the venue, he's got some flowing shots in his book, while also holding up a very neat defense. And he came in as a replacement for Rahane. I don't think he could have dreamt of a better performance on debut.
Exactly. And, you know, talking about Suvedh Parkar, he went on to score that double century, and Sarfaraz Khan also, you know, continued that dream run, notching up that century. Right. And we also had, you know, Mulani rattle the Uttarakhand batting lineup, and he too returned with a fifer. Now, Uttarakhand was, you know, bundled out for 114 to hand Mumbai that huge lead, and nothing worked out for them. So what were your thoughts regarding this?
Like I said, Mumbai was too good across departments, be it bowling, batting and fielding. Even Shams Mulani continues to impress with both bat and ball. He's the leading wicket taker of the tournament, and Uttarakhand simply couldn't find the inspiration to topple such dominance from Mumbai.
Absolutely. And even, you know, the Prithvi Shaw-led side piled up that 261 for 3, and they declared after the skipper scored 72. And Yashasvi Jaiswal also struck 100 in the second century. Aditya Tare also contributed with that gritty 50. So how impressive was that? And finally, the powerhouse of Mumbai coming through?
It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant to watch Shaw and Jaiswal blitzing the ball across the field. Jaiswal reached his maiden first-class run, a much-needed boost for him in red ball cricket. Also, Shaw went about his business in the usual style, with a strike rate closing in on 90, But all said and done, I'm quite perplexed and confused about the mindset to notch up a 795 run target. Personally, I wouldn't want to see more of such matches where the game is absolutely pushed into redundancy. We had the Jharkhand-Nagaland pre-quarters and the Bengal-Jharkhand quarterfinal too held a similar thread. Possibly the teams might give an explanation stating that they were looking for some sort of batting practice in a stop-start season and the bowlers deserve a break. But I can't digest that sort of a contest and actually wish there's some sort of buffer for this in the upcoming seasons.
Exactly, these kind of encounters do bring in a lot of questions. But when you look at Uttarakhand, right, nothing changed for them in the second innings. They were still bundled out for a paltry 69, and they suffered a heavy defeat. A lot of off-field drama also happening for them. So, what are your thoughts on, the bowling for Mumbai, and what do you think is going wrong for Uttarakhand?
Well, I couldn't get a glimpse of the second innings actually, but I'm pretty sure they were exposed to some really quality bowling from Dhawal Kulkarni and Mulani. And I do hope Uttarakhand players, I repeat, the players are proud of the effort to have reached this far. It's a relatively young side on the domestic scene. And with all the talks about the CAU's mistreatment of the players over wages and other facilities, I'm not sure if they were mentally in a state to surprise Mumbai by any means.
Exactly. Here's hoping that they can sort that mess out, and here's also wishing Mumbai has a good tournament ahead. They've qualified for the semi-finals. But let's talk about Jharkhand versus Bengal. Now, Jharkhand was thoroughly frustrated by the Bengal batters. This was another quarter-final game where batting first, Bengal posted 773 for 7. They declared in their first innings, and again they etched their name in record books after their top nine batters scored more than 50 runs. So how amazing was it to see this top-notch record being created? And thoughts on the same?
Personally speaking, I do not know what to make of such a record, to be very honest. It seemed like the Just Cricket venue held up a pretty dead flat wicket. My colleague Dhruva, who was covering the match, said the Jharkhand bowlers, barring Nadeem, looked toothless on that surface. And but credit to all of the Bengal batters for making good use of the opportunity at hand. But I'm not sure if such outings really mold you well for later on in the knockouts where you meet tougher oppositions.
Exactly, and Sudeep Gharami and Majumdar also notched up those individual hundreds. We had Shahbaz Ahmed and Sayan Mondal who were picking up 18 wickets between themselves, and they did manage to bowl out Jharkhand for 298. So, how did you like that bowling effort, and thoughts on the same?
Again, this was a matchup which likens a bit to the Mumbai-Uttarakhand game. Jharkhand does not have the same line of heavyweight players like Bengal. There's a quite little redemption there for Sudeep Gharami. He made his debut in the previous Ranji Trophy final in early 2020 against Saurashtra, where he scored 26, did not cross the 30-run mark in the league stage, and also had two ducks to his name. So coming up with that 186 was pretty crucial to justify the youngster's case. And at the other end, at the other end of the stick, we had the seasoned Anustup going about his craft pretty well. Again, the 38-year-old did not have a prolific league stage run, and this knock should hold him in some confidence. And as for the bowlers, well, Bengal began its bowling by day three when the pitch had paved the way for the spinners and slower bowlers. So Shahbaz Ahmed continues to serve the utility tag very well, and I think he'll be a very, I mean, he'll be a vital cog in the semi-final clash against Madhya Pradesh.
Exactly, having all the departments firing will be crucial. But even the Bengal batters, right, they continued that good form in the second innings. They rode on Manoj Tiwari's 136 to again compile a massive score of 318 for 7, they declared. Now, how impressed were you with Manoj Tiwari's batting effort, and in general, how do you like it?
Pretty impressed actually. I mean, as we know, he's been away from the game with his ministerial duties, but to come back into the circuit again after 2 months without a lot of match preparation, scoring a century and a half century in two innings is commendable. It also speaks about the weight of his experience, and how you put them into good effect at the right time. Hopefully, he can continue his touch in the semi-final, and that makes Bengal's next contest very interesting.
Exactly. Really looking forward to, seeing him carry on that form. But even if you observe the game, right, it eventually ended in a draw, but Bengal marched ahead on the basis of the first innings lead. So, what do you think about this rule of, you know, a team going ahead on the basis of a first innings lead? And do you still see the relevance for this rule?
Not just this one time, but even if you look at the league stages, you have these games where the team with the first innings lead takes 3 points for a draw, and as opposed to the opposition's one. That's where there should be some sort of regulation to ensure the evenness in the contest. It also speaks about the pitches on which some of these teams are actually play. Not all of these matches have also been, what to say, played between contrasting oppositions. We had this match between Mumbai and Saurashtra, which played out a similar result in the group stage, where Mumbai took 3 points based on the first innings lead. It's bizarre then to look at the game as a first-class match, where you have 2 innings to fall, pick yourselves up, and come back to stake a claim for a result. Hopefully, we could see some refinement in such corners pretty soon, and hopefully, there are more voices raised against such discrepancies.
Exactly, you know, it is high time that they have a relook at this rule. But moving ahead, let's talk about UP versus Karnataka. Now, Uttar Pradesh captain Karan Sharma led from the front and handed his side a win against domestic giants Karnataka, which was obviously a shocker for many people, and managed, you know, stake a claim for his team in the semi-finals. Now, Karnataka had taken, you know, that first innings lead after bowling out UP for 155 in reply to that 253. So, were you surprised with the result? And what do you think went wrong for Karnataka in this match?
Honestly, yes, I was a bit surprised with the result. Karnataka, with all these prominent names in the lineup, would have expected to make a may, would have expected to make a spot for the series at home. I don't know if they underestimated the opposition. There were certainly no demons on that pitch, and barring the first half of day one, despite being put into bat, I think Karnataka should have had more runs on the board. When your experienced hands fail to turn up with the bat, there's not much you can expect to do in such games. But then Karnataka struck back sharply to keep UP under 160 and took the lead. And I'm sure they wouldn't have held this result in their minds at that stage. And talking about what's gone wrong for them, this has been the case for quite a while now. Ever since those successive titles in 2013, 14, and 2014, 15, it's been a mix of bad fortune and poor performances in the knockouts for Karnataka. They didn't qualify the next year for the knockouts. In 2016-17, after a fine league stage, they were beaten by Tamil Nadu in the quarterfinals. The following year, they suffered a 5-run defeat to Vidarbha in the semis. And that sort of a trend has continued for them. So you need your big players to step up in such crunch games, failing which you are bound to see similar results.
Exactly. And even if you observe the game, right, the UP bowlers really got into the act in the second innings and they just didn't let Karnataka capitalize on the fact that, you know, they were all out for 114. And just handing UP a target of 213 was definitely not going to be enough. So what were your thoughts going ahead? Did you still think the game was on and like thoughts in general?
Looking at the target, I wasn't sure if UP could make it. While Karnataka's batters flopped again, they would have hoped for a close finish with UP also failing to impress in the first innings with the bat. But then there was no margin for error, and the summation of their mistakes in the end proved to be too costly.
Exactly. And even though, you know, they lost wickets at regular intervals and at one stage they were reduced for 114 for five, I think some spirits of the Karnataka fans were lifted, right? But that's when the captain along with Prince Yadav came to the rescue. They put on that unbeaten stand of 99 for the sixth wicket and they took their side over the line. I think, you know, the captain, the skipper has to be lauded for that patience he showed and he remained unbeaten on 93 of 163. So what were your thoughts on the knock and a tense finish?
Absolutely, it's been quite the season for Karan Sharma, 23-year-old captain on debut, and when it mettered, he proved his mettle with almost the entire chase hinging on his shoulders. They have a big clash up ahead against Mumbai, and Karan's knock has probably come at the right time as a message for his fellow batters to step up a notch. The bowling too, as I mean, UP's bowling has looked pretty good. It covers a lot of variety in Ankit Rajput, Shivam Mavi, Saurabh Kumar, Yash Dayal, and Prince Yadav.
Exactly, you know, going ahead, it will be an interesting encounter for them versus Mumbai, where they can't, you know, falter on any department.
Let's also, talk about Punjab versus MP. Now, Punjab met Madhya Pradesh in the quarterfinal. Batting first, Punjab was off to a decent start despite Shubman Gill's early departure, much to everyone's disappointment. But skipper Abhishek Sharma and no. But we still had Anmolpreet Singh, coming in at three. He put up that partnership of 81 for the second wicket. But somewhere they just, lost. They lost their way, they started losing wickets, and they were eventually bundled out for 219. So what were your thoughts on this score? Was it still commendable?
This is a match I could talk a bit in depth about. We had a delayed start on day one with overnight rains leaving wet patches on the outfield. And so it was a bit of a surprise for me, actually, when I saw Punjab adopted to bat first. Like you said, they lost Shubman very early, but Punjab recovered pretty quickly with Abhishek and Anmolpreet Singh leading the side to lunch at 98 for one. I think that was the only phase of play where they actually dominated Madhya Pradesh. I mean, it was a good attack from the MP seamers, Puneet Date, Gaurav Yadav and Anubhav Agarwal in this first session. But they couldn't find the breakthrough. So, and they came back very sharply to run through the Punjab order, which faced a similar fate to Karnataka, where an experienced top middle order failed to deliver. None of them could post a half century score, and that pretty much summed up their issues.
Exactly. And in reply, we saw, Madhya Pradesh also posting that good total of 397. This is courtesy of a good century from Shubham Sharma and a good half centuries from Himanshu Mantri, Rajat Patidar and Akshar Raghuvanshi. So how good was that batting effort, seeing all of them come together to contribute for this cause?
I had a fine vantage view from over deep extra cover for all 4 days.
Wow.
The part where the Madhya Pradesh batters were playing out against a strong Punjab attack, it was very insightful for me to see how they were dead batting, applying those soft hands to sea of time and slowly go about laying the foundation for the first innings lead. What struck me the most is the clarity each one of them had about their roles in earning a comfortable lead. Be it Rajat, Shubham Sharma, or even the young Akshat Raghuvanshi, who for me was the best batter during the innings. He holds a lot of promise, 3 innings at the Ranji Trophy level and a score of 150 and 69. None of them went away from the plan, and that helped them to easily seal the first innings lead.
Exactly. And even Punjab, right, their batting struggle continued in the second innings where Kumar Kartikeya trapped them in a spin web and he bagged that crucial 6-wicket haul. Saransh Jain, on the other hand, picked up 4 wickets and Punjab could just again manage to put like 203 on the board and just take a 25-run lead. So again, if you just had to dissect what went wrong, was it like a collective batting failure or they were just not able to, acclimatize themselves to the pitch? Thoughts?
Firstly, it was a very, good comeback from Kartikeya. He was smashed for 18 runs in his first play. 18 runs in 2 overs in his first spell in the first innings. He came back decently, but then a couple of catches were dropped off his bowling. But in the second innings, he started to bowl a bit, lot slower through the air, and maintained a fine line to the batters and picked up all the big wickets, including Gill and Abhishek. And also registered his best bowling figures in first-class cricket. So this time, there was a bit of turn and bounce doing the talking. And Punjab seemed nowhere close to the task at hand.
Exactly. And Madhya Pradesh, obviously eventually chased down that target of 26 runs. And they won with a massive margin too, right? So were you surprised that Punjab didn't make it through? Like, before the match started, what were your thoughts? Like, who did you think, would win the match?
I'd expected it to be a close match with the arrival of Shubman Gill. Punjab looked the stronger batting unit on paper. Add to that, Madhya Pradesh was missing the services of four frontline options in Avesh Khan, Venkatesh Iyer, Kuldeep Sen and Ishwar Pandey. So to still manage a comfortable win like this, I think the credit must go to their planning and preparation under coach Chandrakant Pandit and also for the fact that their talent pool has clearly expanded in recent years. So in the end, Madhya Pradesh was very clinical and earned the deserving result.
Exactly, and as we take the discussion towards semi-final, we have Bengal that will take on Madhya Pradesh in the first semi-final and the match starts tomorrow. Now, MP did hammer Punjab by 10 wickets. And so how excited are you for this encounter and who do you think has the upper hand?
I'm very excited about this match in particular. It's very tough to actually predict who might come out on top in this one. But I feel Madhya Pradesh has a slight edge over Bengal. If they nail their execution like they did against Punjab, it's pretty much going their way. Also, they might get the boost of Kuldeep Sen in the pace setup. And that makes up for an exciting battle of seamers between the sides.
Exactly. And even in the second semi-final, right, we have Mumbai who will square off against UP. And Mumbai, as we spoke about, got the better of Uttarakhand by that record 725 runs. And UP did manage to stun Karnataka. So this is going to be an absolute belter of an encounter. And who are some of the players that, you know, you personally are going to be watching out for?
So if the conditions at the Just Cricket Academy are going to be anything like what we had on offer during the quarterfinal, I wouldn't be surprised if Mumbai swings big once again. But then UP is coming in with a fiery bowling attack as well. I'll be keen to watch how Saurabh Kumar fares with the ball. And as the Mumbai ranks, it will once again be up to Sarfaraz Khan. Also, I'm expecting a big outing for Prithvi Shaw as well this time.
Right. And before we, you know, wrap up the episode, do you have any predictions for the semi-finals? I know predictions are difficult to make, but if you just had to make any.
Well, to pick one this day, I think it would be a Mumbai versus Madhya Pradesh final.
Okay. And before we wrap up the episode, do you have any final thoughts and a message for the listeners who are ardently following the Ranji Trophy?
Well, personally, it was a very moving experience for me in Bangalore. It was just the second match that I was covering. I thank my editor, Ayan Sen Gupta, for giving me this opportunity. And I believe I've done justice to the coverage to the best of my abilities. I was able to cover most of the happenings on all 4 days with my camera also, which is a very big takeaway from this trip for me. And I hope I was able to give at least some of the cricket fans on Twitter a new perspective of coverage. And to the listeners, keep supporting the domestic game and also women's cricket. Someday I hope we could elevate the coverage of their domestic games to at least this level where all games are streamed and covered by reporters. The players out there absolutely crave more support, and there's a lot to explore in their stories, be it a Kumar Kartikeya Singh who hasn't been home in 9 years, or a 36-year-old sports minister scoring 100 on return. There's so much going behind the scenes. So let's all be more civil in our following of the game and support everyone who's involved in providing cricketing and entertainment to the public. Also, do keep supporting Never on the Back Foot, folks. I feel it's been a great initiative. Wish you all the very best to carry this forward in full strength.
Thank you so much, Dalit. That has to be a very good conclusion to this episode. And absolutely, you have done justice to the coverage this time around. You know, I've been following you on Twitter and on Instagram too with the photos and everything. And here's hoping we get to see you live report a lot of games. And with this, we draw curtains on the episode. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule and sharing such insightful thoughts about the quarterfinals that happened. And here's hoping, you know, the semifinals and finals also live up to the billing. This was a great collaboration, and I'd love to have you on the podcast again. Till then, take care and bye.
Thank you, Neha. The pleasure has been mine. Thank you.
I'd like to thank you all for ardently supporting my blog and this podcast. It really gives me the strength and zeal to keep working and delivering quality content to you all. A heartfelt thank you. Do check out @NeverOnTheBackFoot on Instagram and @NeverOnTheBackOne on Twitter for the latest facts, trivia, quizzes, terminology, and a lot more. The podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Overcast, and a lot of other platforms. So please do spread the word. Also, feel free to share your thoughts and suggestions for the already published episodes and recommendations for future topics. Do share this widely, and your support is really appreciated. See you next time, listeners. Cheers, stay safe, and take care. Bye for now.